It is another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Welcome back. I'm Chris Heal, and it is another two-part special as well. Obviously, we've had a lot of New Zealand coverage on our podcasts recently, but we also managed to squeeze in Pat Lam a couple of weeks ago, and unbelievable to have the Bristol Bears director of rugby on the podcast. The first part of this podcast, which you'll hear shortly, is very much about him coming to Bristol and the vision that he had for the club and the culture that he's managed to create there at Ashton Gate. And obviously Bristol currently sitting third in the Gallagher Premiership and hoping that the season will resume on the date that has been penciled in, the 15th of August, because Bristol are aiming high, as Pat will discuss in the first part of this Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. So the first part, as I said, will be pretty much focused on his time with Bristol Bears and the vision that Pat and the club have. And then the second part, we'll be talking a little bit about sort of Pat's playing career as well as his coaching as well at Connacht before we get into his Mars 15. So coming up, first and foremost, is part one of our Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with Bristol Bears Director of Rugby, Pat Lam. Hello, it's another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. I'm Chris Hill. I hope wherever you're listening, you're keeping well and safe during this lockdown period. It's been a brilliant few weeks on the Loose Heads podcast in terms of the guests we've had on. We had Sean Edwards, so our most recent guest, Dane Coles, ahead of the new Super Rugby season, and the three men behind this operation, which get these guests on and everything to do with Loose Heads, is of course the co-founders, Mark Shotton, Rob Shotton and Dave Nicol. Guys, welcome once again. How are we all?
Very well, thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. And to have those few names feature on Talking Rugby Union as well has been a real, real bonus for us during this lockdown period. So I can't thank the guys at Loose Heads enough for helping us out with that. And I think our next guest probably falls under the bracket of the big names that we've had recently, because I'm delighted to say Bristol Bears Director of Rugby, Pat Lam, joins us on the podcast this afternoon. Pat, thank you so much for giving us your time. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for having me on. Pleasure.
And I think you've probably been asked this a number of times, Pat, in a couple of the media things you've been doing during the lockdown period. But how have you been during this period?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like a game. You've got to take every minute as it comes, every day as it comes. I mean, if you told us right at the very beginning, all right, you're going to be down for 10, 11 weeks and then we'll see you then, you know, that could have been difficult. So it's about going day to day and looking like anything in challenges in life. You know, you face the challenge and you make your plan and how you're going to get through it. And then you focus on the positive and the important things. And so, certainly, being able to have the quality family time, which bonus family time, because we do get quality time, but this is all bonus time, which has been awesome. And, you know, there's six of us here at the moment, me, my wife, and four of the five children. And we've had four birthdays in lockdown as well, which has been different, you know. So my daughter's, the next one's in beginning of July. So I think after the last one, we're all saying, well, let's hope that we can be out of lockdown by the time we have her birthday. So, no, there's some great stuff. And the other real bonus is, you know, when you're in Super Rugby, you always get about 4 or 5 months of preparation to go in between seasons. Northern Hemisphere Rugby, it's, you know, 4 weeks and then you're back into it again. So a really good chance to reflect, review and prepare. And take us hopefully to another level. So it's been good times.
Yeah, and it's quite key that you mentioned family there, Pat, because I guess when rugby went into lockdown, everyone was talking about, well, when's it going to return? But I know you did an interview and you talked about how important family and connecting was during this period of time. And I know you were very conscious to make sure that your family over in New Zealand was doing okay, as well as your family here in the UK as well. So how important was it for you to, first and foremost, focus on that part of your life before anything rugby related came into it?
I think it's important for anything. So when I go back to the thing about what asking the question, that we're all forced to ask, well, what is, you know, when you enter a lockdown, what are the most important things? So, and we acknowledge it all the time and around staying connected, you know, whether as a team, but certainly to the people that's important to you, and whether that's your wife, your partner, your children, mums and dads. You know, we try to make them a big part of the club as well, because it's an important part of who we are. And if you don't, you're missing out on really growing the player or the individual or the staff member to the best of their ability. So it's a big part. So I think you're generally building your team culture and everything for the performance on the field. you know, that ultimately when you're in those tough moments, and they are, it's physically tough to play the game, and you're coming together as a group trying to work and obviously win games and perform to your best. But what the pandemic has done is put the emphasis on there is no game, but it put our culture into a really good spotlight. That so when we're doing things and connecting, it's what we normally do every day anyway. And it's come in real handy, you know, through this time to be able to support each other. And, you know, the boys have done a lot of great work. The staff have done a lot of great work, not only in the community, but certainly staying connected and keeping an eye on each other.
And you mentioned sort of the community aspects of the lads there, Pat, and Nev. I know you've said in the past that it's all about leaving nobody behind. And I guess right now, during this pandemic that we had, that mental health is an issue which is talked about more and more. And I know when you were over in Ireland, you spoke really candidly about it. And you said it's okay not to be okay. And it is very important to create a rugby environment which mirrors real life as well. So I guess that connection within the team and within you guys is also helping the mental health aspects as well.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, when I got involved there, my message was also slightly different, in that a lot of the messages that were coming out was exactly that telling the person who's suffering from mental health that it's not okay to be, it's okay to be okay, not okay, sorry, and that to seek help. But what I wanted to give a message was, let's look out for people. Let's look out for people who need help, you know, because not everyone has mental health, goes through it. You know, some are very blessed and fortunate not to, but there's a lot who do. And it's like anything. And the part of the building relationships and connecting is it's not just for in good times and having a, you know, laugh and so forth. It's so that people can genuinely discern that someone's not right, can ask the question, are you okay, and be there. And I think if you talk to most people who've come through mental health, the most important thing was that they found hope, they found support. So the message I would really wanted to give out there was to everybody, whether you have mental health or you don't, look out for each other. And that's what we do on the team anyway.
Absolutely, Pat. Couldn't agree with you more on that. And in terms of the player side of things, obviously there's a lot of emphasis on fitness and stuff at the moment with the season hopefully resuming soon, Pat. But what Rob mentioned to me before we started the podcast, that you've set up a survival plan for the Bristol Bears. I mean, what has that entailed over the last few weeks or so?
Yeah, well, it started off, I named it a survival plan. That lasted about 10 seconds. And I said, actually, no, I don't like that. I wanted a Bears, it was the Bears coronavirus winning plan. You know, how to win. And, you know, so now it was, again, the quality of the staff. I put a challenge to them when we got an inkling that we might go into lockdown. And we were supposed to, we were on a quick short break because we had beaten Harlequins on the Sunday. We had gave them the rest of the week off, and we were coming back to ready to play Saracens. And we were supposed to be 8:30 in the morning like we do. You know, have a full team meeting, everyone, all staff, all players, and we start the week every morning at 8:30 with the, you know, key messages and you know, hopefully an inspiring message as well. But I sent a message out on to all the staff that the heads department, if we go into lockdown, here are the different scenarios. I want you to think of your department and how would you be able to, what are some key things to be able to tick off, whether we're down as modified. We can come in small groups, or whether we're at home, or whether we're actually completely locked down and can't go anywhere. And they did all that. We had a meeting at 7 o'clock that morning on Monday. I asked all the rest of the everyone else not to come in until 1 o'clock, and we thrashed it out two and a half, maybe 3 hours. Everyone contributed, and we formulated the plan. We asked every single question on how would we do this? What about the guys who live here? The ones on their own? How are we going to get equipment to them? How are we going to do this? So, and it was awesome. I just asked the questions, the staff provided it all. And then we brought everyone at 1 o'clock and we rolled it all out, very similar to what the government do. Hopefully we're doing a bit of a better job. Here's level 1, 2, 3, all the ones. And then this is what's going to happen. And it's like anything in life and business and sport, but having clarity on what the big picture is, you know, gives everyone comfort, gives everyone security. And then we rolled it out, and it's just worked the treat. So when certain things happen, we were told we're doing this, bang, everyone knew exactly what the plan was and they can, you know, initiate it. And then I had staff meetings 9 o'clock every Monday so we can stay connected, and then player meetings as well. So, you know, and that's been good. And the boys have set up little groups and we've set out different challenges. S&C done well. The coaches have done schoolwork. Medical guys said rehab, they've still come in with PPE equipment and so forth and had treatment. So it's been great. It's been really, really pleased and just, you know, really confirmed to me that we've got great people that work for the Bristol Bears.
Something else you've kind of been discussing around, you know, during lockdown as a bit of an inspiration for the team is the Last Dance documentary on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, like, it's impossible to watch that and not be inspired by Jordan and those Bulls teams. But is there anything specific you kind of took from that documentary that you think could be applied to Bears?
Oh, there's a lot there that I think, you know, I think with lockdown, everyone's watching more TV and documentaries and different things. And I couldn't have picked a better one to be on there because that certainly was through my playing era in the 90s. And so you could, you know, relate to a lot of what was going on because, you know, often, you know, we're talking now 30 years ago and often, you know, 20 to 30 years and people talk to how players are different now. You know, society's different now. The young people are different now. And so the good thing, like in our day, you know, it's either, you know, toughen up, harden up, or move on, you know. And you actually got pretty, you got resilience. You know, people will talk to you in a certain way, but that was just the way things were done. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It was just the way it was. And, you know, to see players go, geez, Michael Jordan was so focused on being the best and not the big message, not asking anyone to do anything that he wasn't going to do. And yes, there was guys that said he wasn't a nice guy and so forth. But at the end of the day, there were so many guys that achieved a lot of things because he raised the standards, you know, and you can debate whether he did it one way. But at the end of the day, it's like anything. I'm still a big believer. I remember at school, right from a young age, we got taught about goal setting, set a goal and work your way to it. And it actually becomes for some people, oh, you heard that before. But mate, you can hear it. It's going to be here forever. It's simple. It's an easy philosophy. Here's the goal. What's the plan? And start working your way to it. And understanding it. Yeah, he had some talent, but it's not the talent he had. We all got some talent. It's what you do with that talent that determines, you know, how good or how great you're going to be and how committed you are to it. So there were so many positive analogies for us as a team that our players and our staff could resonate with. And some of them actually said, yeah, you know, we have it pretty easy, you know, in our life. And, you know, because there is times, and I know Jordan Crane was big on it, you know, he came through that era too, that, you know, sometimes he used to get frustrated and you know, just get on with it. You know, and if you've got a problem, tell the guys you've got a problem and make them deal with it. But, you know, he's grown as well to realize there is, you know, people are different, but the philosophy and the aim is what they're trying to achieve is the same.
Yeah. And you kind of touch on it there, but obviously kind of Jordan had that mentality of win at all costs, even though it kind of resulted in bust ups with teammates, whether verbally or, you know, kind of with Steve Kerr in the physical way. Do you think it's possible to kind of dovetail that sort of win at all costs mentality with a really strong team culture, particularly in a sport like rugby?
Yeah, without a doubt. That's why my number one emphasis I put on everything is relationships. Build your relationships. Because yeah, if you put it into the war analogy and going into war, you got to always look at rugby very similar in the sense to go to war, you need to know what you're fighting for. You need to know who you represent. And then most importantly, I've got to be able to trust the guy next to me and the guy next to me. When a call's made and I don't trust that call, I'm that second guessing myself, and the next thing myself and others around us could get killed. And it's exactly the same in the game. So when I talk about trying to accelerate relationships and get to know each other, it's because not just in the great times, but it's the times you're under pressure. When you're under pressure, you want to be able to say exactly what you need to say, because you you're creating it, and what you're saying, you're creating a culture that what we say is to help the team. Don't take it personally. I'm just saying it to make the team and challenge it. But you've got to build those relationships. So the way I talk to some of the players now across the line and what I expect of the staff is completely different from my first 2-3 months with them, you know, because I didn't have a relationship. It's like you guys, I'm just meeting Lottie for the first time today. You know, I couldn't say certain things to you guys because I don't know you. But, you know, I always talk about, you know, me and my wife. Now, my wife is beautiful, like as in a beautiful person. And she, the way she, everyone loves her because she's got a great smile and she cares for people and she's really good communicator with people. They have never, ever, I don't think anyone's seen the way she is when she talks to me. if I've done something wrong, you know. But I see that as a privilege. I see that as a privilege that she can be straight up and honest and tell me how she feels. I feel like I'm the chosen one for that because me and her have this relationship that she can say that, and I know she's not being pissed. I realize that, you know, I've upset her, I've done something wrong, so we've got to talk through it. It's like when players or people that are young people say to me, oh, yeah, me and my girlfriend, we never argue. I said, no, it's not that you're not arguing, you're not talking, you're not communicating, you know. And so I do like conflict and challenge because then if it's done the right way, because at the end of it, you can get some change and you can get some growth. You know, if everything's not been said, you just stay the same of anything, you go backwards. So when you highlight all of this stuff at the very beginning, and I give everyone my coaching philosophy, which touches on that. I give everyone the big picture, and I put out a lot of different philosophies. You would have heard me talk about that vision drives leadership. Leadership drives culture. Culture drives performance. And that's what creates the legacy. You know, and all these other different philosophies I roll out at the very beginning. But now the people who are in our environment know, oh, that's, we're living it. They can see that, you know. I mean, I had to make some tough calls of players and staff that are leaving. And that's the worst part of my job. But at the very beginning, I always talk about relationships being very important and performance being really important, you know, particularly in the work that we're in. But I don't mix the two of them in the sense that I could be really good friends of you, but ultimately your currency while you're in the Bristol Bears is your performance, whether you're a physio, a doctor, S&C or a rugby player, you know, because exactly what him, you know, I could be come across as a really nice guy, but if we don't perform or I don't perform, I lose my job. Everyone does that. So it's all about supporting your performance. So I've had to let some really good people go. And a lot of it would be whether, you know, it's on performance or someone else can do the job better or the same, you know, within a budget. So those are all the different decisions. But you put those philosophies out there and then everyone can relate to it.
Absolutely, Pat. I mean, just to bring you in, Rob, obviously you've been working with the Bristol Bears for a year and a half, if that's right in saying. And before we go into sort of what Pat's just discussed there about sort of the team culture, he spoke so candidly and so well about mental health at the top of the podcast. And I mean, you said before we got Pat on that he's such a massive believer in mental health, so it must be really pleasing that you are, first of all, we got Pat on, but second of all, you're working with someone who is so passionate about mental health awareness as you are as well.
Yeah, it's brilliant to have Pat on. You know, I've had the pleasure to be down at the training ground and speak to Pat, and he's one of the most inspiring blokes I've ever met. But just to come on to you know, Bristol Bears and a question for you, Pat. You know, you've been quoted on saying that if you want me to coach rugby, you've got the wrong guy. I've spoken to you before a couple of times about how you joined Bristol and that there were other clubs in for you. But there was something about Bristol and there was something about Steve Lansdowne's philosophy to inspire the community through rugby success. Can you just explain that initial conversation with Steve and just how important was that vision to you?
Yeah, it was massively important because I went from an enjoyable playing career and transitioned straight into coaching. So Ian McGeachan took me into Scotland, mentored me, was fantastic. And then I ended up coaching Auckland, the provincial team, and we had good success. Had to interview for all of these roles. And then I ended up going to the Blues. No interview, just Super Rugby, great job, young coach. You know, salary goes up, just took it. Yeah, fantastic. And then got into the role and started going. Then I started looking sideways at what's happening. Don't worry about that. You just coach rugby. You'll be right. But all the things that were going on around the place, the periphery, was affecting what was happening here. But and who gets judged on everything and what we do on the field. and what I've been affected by here, and things that there was just no clarity whatsoever. So I came away from that experience. I did 5 years there. And at the end of it, I came away and said, right, and I got sacked. I said, right, the next job I go, I'm never, ever going to do another job for anybody unless I have absolute clarity on what their vision is because of the equation I gave before. And making sure, because I knew what my coaching vision was, I know what my coaching philosophy is, my mission statement, and it has to marry and go together. If it doesn't, the same thing's going to happen, the situation I found myself in. So, and so the same thing when I went to Connacht, there was five different options. At Connacht, my agent told me there's five, and got to meet them all. Connacht was number one before I, five was number five before I met. After I met everyone, it changed to number one because of the vision. And then when Bristol, after we won the Pro 12, there was quite a few offers of people wanting me to come to their club. And at the stage, I was very happy with Connacht. They didn't want to leave. Family loved it in the west of Ireland. And then I got in the space of two, there was two premiership clubs. I met first, and then the second, no, I met Bristol first. So I came over first to meet Chris Boy, John Lansdowne. And basically they went through it all and asked them and so forth around the vision and then got a chance to talk about what I'd do and so forth. But I was pretty much come away from there thinking, well, it's okay. And then Steve flew over, with his wife, with Maggie. They came over to the west of Ireland and we spent 4 hours, with Steph and the two of them. And I said to him, Steve, what is your vision? And he started to talk about, obviously we need some success on the rugby field, without a doubt. But he started to talk about Bristol, the people, the city, and you could just see the passion he had about it, you know. And then I said, oh yeah, but you're a football man. And he says, because you obviously did my homework and you coach football, he owns a football club. He goes, I am, but I'm a sport person. I know the impact that sport has on galvanizing and bringing together a community, and the rugby community within Bristol has suffered a long time. And he says that it's, you know, we need some inspiration and da da da. So I went away from that and I said, geez, I like that. And the reason I like that is because it was more than a game. He wasn't just talking about rugby. And I knew, and it's come to play now where we are now, where the reason Steve is very supportive of what we're doing is we've built trust and the club has become the club exactly the way that he saw it. You know, that's what we've been able to do, all the people, all the players. And I went away and I just said to Steve and Chris, because Chris Boy gave a very similar statement around the vision. But I put it, a vision has to be known by everybody. So it has to be one statement. So all I did was write down, inspire our community for rugby success. I said to Steve, is this it? He goes, is this what you mean? He goes, yes. And Chris, yes. So then I was able to come in. And interesting, and I knew the answer. I took all the staff away. I took all the players away on a different day. And I said, right, I want everyone to write on their books what you think the Bristol rugby vision is. They all wrote it down. Not one single person had the same thing. Sorry, had the one that was written by Steve. And no one, there's seven different answers. And so all I said when I rolled it out, inspire our community for rugby success, I said, does that encapsulate what you have on your books? Or 45 staff or 50 odd players said yes. So now we were in one bus. Now we were going through one door instead of seven different doors. Because as I said, before I arrived there, there's a lot of good people working in Bristol Rugby. However, they're all doing their own different things. You know, nothing was together. So the leaders were making decisions on all over the place, which made necessary. There's nothing, no destination, a bus going around in circles. And that's all we did. It started with that. And I think the thing that I've loved the most is, for me, one of the reasons I said, if you want just rugby coach, you got the wrong guy, because I've been very blessed to be in very successful teams, but I've also been very blessed and fortunate to be in some rubbish teams, some great teams. And the good thing when I stand back, there's three non-negotiables. You've got to have a game that can win and beat any team in the world. Now, I'm not talking about just players. I'm talking about the game. I believe my game could beat anybody, but I need the players to come up and be upskilled to play it. So I'll never bring the game down to the players. They've got to come up, which means I need good staff to coach the players to play the game that we need to play. The second thing is, you've got to have a really good culture. And if the culture's not right, you could have a fantastic game, but people aren't enjoying being there. Likewise, you could have a great culture, but you've got a game that they can't win. You'll win semi-finals, playoffs, you'll have a good season, but you might stay in the premiership all the time, but you won't win it. And then the third one is that you've got to have leaders. It's around leadership. If you do not bring leaders and power the people behind you, you might win it once, but you'll never win it again. You know, you've got to make sure that the whole philosophy that we have within the group, that when you come into Bristol Bears, you do everything, you pick up, understand what's gone before, add value to it and leave it in a better place, pass it on to the next person. Make sure you're educating and teaching the people around the Bristol way, the way we do things, the way we respect each other, our community, a whole lot, and then it becomes a sustainable thing. So that's why I said to Stephen, if you want me to come, I need to look after those three areas. And because the issue I had, it's all very well to have a team culture, but we don't have an organisation culture. We've got problems. So everyone in the Bears organisation has to be following the same sort of vision, values and standards, and be accountable to it.
Absolutely, Pat. I think that probably answers the next point that I've got that we were thinking of in terms of, you also said that being a Bristol Bear is more than just a rugby. So I guess that encapsulates everything you just said there. But in terms of some of the changes that you enforced when you first came in, I know there's a lot of things around handshakes and stuff like that, but is it those like small and fine details which help the bigger picture that you've just been talking about?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I think I did a analogy when I first got in with all the staff. I actually put 50 pound out. I did an exercise, sorry, and I bought my kids' 1,000-piece puzzle. And basically, I gave everyone an opportunity. Five people an opportunity to win the 50 pound. They had to come up, grab one piece, look at it, and they had 10 seconds to try and tell me what the picture was. And if they could, they'd take the 50 pound. And they were looking at it. No one could, they had a guess, but no one could get it. And then I ripped the paper off the cover and said, you won't be able to complete this 1,000-piece puzzle unless you know what the big picture looks like, which is all about the vision. And I said, but the other side of it too, it emphasizes how important every person's role is. Because I said, if you take one piece out, you've done a puzzle of 999 pieces. If that one in the middle is missing, it's not, there's something wrong with it. And which emphasized the importance of every single role. So you might have some success, but you won't have ultimate success unless the value of everybody is recognized and appreciated and valued. And then the other side, so you can do that from a game plan perspective, the whole organization perspective, but then also all the little things that you're adding in, whether it's handshakes, that also comes into the picture. The handshakes one for me is a connection one. And came way back when I was playing New Zealand Sevens. And I remember I used to be in teams, and some guys are naturally get up and they, hey, how you doing? Morning. Some just get up, walk in, sit down, and don't talk to anyone. You know, and obviously that's their own habits. So making sure that we connect, and you work it on the basis that we're only as good as our weakest links, so we've got to connect our links. Handshakes is just the way to do it. And it's probably, someone asked me now that you're in lockdown and we got social distancing, how are you going to manage it? I said, well, easy, there's virtual. You can still do that from a distance. It's not the actual, the handshake and the hug is great, but it's just a means to connect. So as long as, if we still got social distancing, you know, you can still connect. I mean, in the islands though, we just raise our eyebrows like that, you know, and a hug. So you can still keep distancing. The point is, make sure you still connect. And, when I was at Connacht, I did a 5-action handshake. So I got the players to do that because I wanted them to understand who we represent. When I came to Bristol, I've allowed the boys to add and they come up with it as well. So it just becomes something that's special for the group.
Just on that team spirit and good team spirit, it's clear to see, you know, when I'm lucky enough to go down to the Bears training ground to show our sponsors around, after each conversation, you'll get the boys to stand up and sit next to someone else. You know, the boys are welcoming whenever you're at the training ground. They give you a fist bump. You speak so much about how important culture is in rugby and also for any organisation. What were the first things you did when you arrived in Bristol? Obviously, the handshakes as well, and how do you get that real team spirit?
Okay, the first thing that when I got there, it was relatively easy to get change because all I did when I went through the meeting is I put up the last 10 years of finishing places for Bristol Rugby. So I said, here we go. Finished relegated in the championship, da 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 da, and it didn't look great. happened. So I just, but I didn't say that. I just put it all there. I said, okay, thoughts, just have a discussion, thoughts. And they all came back and said, well, not great. We need to change that. And everyone agreed we need to change. And I said, well, we all know the saying about insanity. So let's, you know, so I just want to make it clear here. I'm not here to change for change's sake. I'm here to change to vision, do things that work and we go through. That's why I had to, because I knew people were already upset because I changed offices, people's offices, because the flow was wrong. The complete flow of everything. And when I interviewed everybody, you know, when I, before I was coming in, just catching up what they would change. If they were me, what would you keep? What would you change? Everyone talked about the silos, about people working in isolation, the breakdown of communication. And the first thing I did when I walked into Clifton's training ground, I walked in there with, this is completely the, one of the reasons it doesn't help us, is everyone's in the wrong places. So I knew when I asked Mark Tainton before I come, can you just put these changes in place? A few people got their nose out of joint. But when I put that up, they could understand. And I said, there's going to be further changes as we go through. But again, I rolled out the importance of culture. And the thing I talked about culture is, I said, we need to build true team culture. And what is that? It's, well, I have a simple word for our culture, four-letter word, love. And you, as you can imagine, when I put that up, people go, oh, okay. And the players go, oh, yeah, right. But I said, if you define love, it's sacrificing oneself for the benefit of others. I said, so think about all the people you love. You know, I know, I'm sure Mark would do whatever he can to make sure, Rob, that you, you can benefit. And it's the same. And I think that's the, and you'd do the same for your dad as well. And that's the thing, is if we, I don't need to bring someone, you know, you can pay thousands and they come and work on culture. I don't need that. You define it, you understand it, and you acknowledge it. So I often talk about when players are on the ground and a guy is in trouble, and there's a bigger guy, and a younger guy, a smaller, lighter guy comes and cleans him out, drops his body down really low. I mean, that's a lot of love. When I see the older guys sharing with the younger guys, helping them, under, you know, with their game plan and so forth, man, that's a lot of love there as well. You know, when someone beats someone in the tackle and a guy sprints a bit forward to cover his backside, man, that's a lot of love. So, again, go back to what I said at the beginning. Give clarity on what it is and then look for it. People can work for it and acknowledge it and say, awesome, awesome. And I think that's, once you put that there as a culture, everything else makes it, why are we doing that? Oh, yeah. We want to build a really good relationship, really good connection so that, you know, that we can, you know, affect our whole team. So, and it's all geared to getting us to where we need to be because everyone wants to change.
One of the things that I wanted to pick up in terms of that whole community spirit is sort of the attendances that you do get at Ashton Gate, and especially those on a Friday night. I mean, I follow Rob on Instagram and it seems like an absolutely cracking atmosphere down there. And is that so important? And is that sort of part of the vision that you had when you first came to the club? Because it is a fantastic structure that you've got there. But to have it filled on a Friday night or across the weekend must be really pleasing for you to see now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if we go back to the very beginning, which is the vision, when Steve talked to me about the community. And the biggest thing, if you invest in your community and you really take make a real effort in your community, the community will get behind you as well. And I think the big thing too is that one of the reasons, and this is, you know, ingrained in me from a young age because, you know, you have pride of where you're from. And in the old day, you would play for your school and at your school, you had your certain colours and maybe we're going to beat everybody that we can and you're really proud for representing your school. And then you go and play for your club and that become a, you know, real rivalry, but yeah, this is my club. It's like a, you know, your army, if you like. And then you play for your province and then you play for your country and you wouldn't dare change. You wouldn't change. If you change, you'd be, you know, it's not good. And then, but the problem with professional rugby is that suddenly, and I was in that changeover, is that suddenly people are moving all over the place, changing over because it's a job. But the thing is, I remember in those amateur days, you would put your body on the line 5-10 minutes to go just to, for the cause, for the people you represent, your schoolmates, your clubmates, your country, all of that. But the problem of when everyone started to move, I couldn't say, particularly when I was in Auckland and Canterbury, and Auckland and Canterbury, North and South, Christchurch and Auckland, there's a real fierce rivalry, blue, red, blue and white, red and black. And you're growing up to hate each other. Well, no, so the Canterbury hate Auckland more because Auckland are like London, if you like. And basically, they started to come up. Now, I couldn't go back to the old team talks and we're blue and white and all that because, mate, that doesn't. What I could do is connect them to the community to show them who they actually represent. So then you get them into the schools, you get them into the hospitals, and you get people, and all these kids looking up, oh, hey, they go, oh, yeah, how you doing? And all of a sudden, they have a sense of purpose on who they represent. And so when you got teams that I came up to here, and Connacht is really about making sure that we got people here that aren't all from Bristol, got people who aren't all English all over the world, but we can connect them and to understand, give them history. So we have every week, we have George Klosker, Blake Boyle and Academy Boys who are Bristolians, who are in our main group, and their job is to give out Bristol facts. It's actually two guys did it last year. Andy Uren and Joycey used to do it, and they passed it down to the next guys. So every day, they got to get up and give up some interesting facts about Bristol. So we're learning about more and more about Bristol, Bristol, and Bristol culture. But then we also getting to know the Bristol people. So then when they're on the bodies on the line, the games on the line, they'll really get. And that's what our people see. They can see the boys giving everything, so they want to get behind the team and get back. And so it's been a really good. Involvement with the community, and we're getting the benefit, and obviously we're playing well because the boys want to represent them well, and we're getting followed well.
Yeah, and part of the vision, obviously, part is the results on the pitch, and I know you kicked things off this season with a home game on a Friday night against Bath, which is always a great way to kick things off, and you guys got the really good start to the season. And one thing that struck with me was the interview you did with BT Sport after, where you talked about where the club want to go this season. And 12 months earlier, you said, well, we want to be Champions Cup. And I know you guys just finished just short of that, but it wasn't like, well, no, we're going to go for top six again. It was the higher ambitions once more. And you've talked about a five-year plan. So are you on schedule for that at the moment because of how well you've been able to develop since you took over in the Championship?
Yeah, I mean, it's all very well saying to Steve, yep, we're going to inspire the community. You have to come up with a plan. You know, so now I know what the vision is. And then the other thing I put with that is three key objectives every year for us. And that is the Champions Cup I put in there. That's the ambition because everyone's telling me, oh, you got to get into Premiership. You got to survive and stay in it. It's not the way I work. There's no reason why we can't be the best, the most dominant team in the Northern Hemisphere. There's no reason at all, to have that sort of ambition. And it's sort of, I can see that we can do that. All right, but that's there's a lot of work to be done. The second part was about players playing for England because players want to play for the highest level. That's all about our rugby program. If our rugby program is not good enough or strong enough, players won't be playing for England. And the third one, which is our passion, it's about the homegrown players. You know, that's our people. That's the academy, the schools, the clubs trying to bring, making sure they come through. And even if they don't play for Bristol, at least they can come and inspire the community in so many other ways from the values and experiences they get from our great game. So that's all put in place as well. And I think ultimately, everything that we've worked together is all geared to fit in those three areas. And then when we get to the game, when we get to the actual game and what we're trying to do, the targets that we've set for ourselves every year goes up and up, which is why, ultimately, as I said, relationship performance, I've got to keep everyone accountable. If people said to me, well, how's Bristol? How are you going to get Bristol to be successful? How are they going to be consistent and be? I said, well, easy. Everyone's got to be better. Everyone, myself included. And we ask two questions all the time. What have we done well? What can we do better? The first one is grow. The first question is reinforcing that we're good. The second one is our growth and making sure that we get better. And that's the challenge for everybody. You know, at the moment in lockdown, I've asked all staff members as an example, just write down a few things around how you can become world-class. What sort of things you need to do and you need help on. And then I've been able to just catch up with staff individually. And it's great. It's great to see what people have put down. But once you write it down, get to work.
When you talk about the setup, it's an organisation, isn't it? It's a big family, but it's an organisation. Pep Guardiola talks about when he went to Barcelona, he was probably the worst choice Barcelona could have, but he had a vision about how the culture could look. And he freely admits he couldn't have done it without cultural architects, is what he talks about. Who in the Bristol Bears setup are your cultural architects, the guys who help you deliver that vision?
I think the thing is, when everyone comes into, so when I first came, I rolled that out to everybody that was here, that I inherited. And obviously a lot of people have left from that first year. But once they have that, they've got clarity. And then they can drive it themselves, whether it's heads of departments. So there's a lot of, once I do big picture, there's a lot of little meetings as well. And then people get hold of it and they resonate it. But what I've found is that obviously every single person that comes in, whether it's a player or staff, I'll roll out the five-year plan. I'll roll out my philosophy, everything. And then I say, look, this is not, and I'm not asking you to come here. I'm inviting you, you know. But I'd just put myself in the same situation. I would hate to arrive here and then suddenly I'm told something that I never knew about. So what I said to you, if you want to come to Bristol Bears, understand first where we are. And I'll say the same thing. I say, what I'm going to say to you, if it's a player, is exactly what I say to my children. All right. When they say, Dad, what club should I go to? What university should I go to? Da, da, da. And I say, well, what's your big dream? You know, what's your philosophy? What's your standards and your values? Have a look at all the universities and which is the best one that's aligned with you be able to do it. And then, you know, you make the choice. You'll have no problems as long as you do the work. And I say the same thing. I said, so when I do an interview with a player, so I get a message and saying that from an agent, this player wants to come to the Bears. And I look at it and go, okay, we have a place, let's see. Sit down, have a talk with them. And then I find out, okay, tell me a bit about you, ask all the questions. I go, okay, now I'm going to show you what we're about. And I want you to make sure it's aligned. Because if we don't align, if you want to come here for just money, if you want to come here just to play rugby, you've got the wrong team. And they end up signing up for exactly what I did. I signed up for a bigger purpose than just playing games. And then they get here. And so when I'm getting, people are saying to me, oh, the players are awesome, what they do. It's because they all saw it and they wanted to be part of it and they're throwing them whole selves into doing it. So it's fantastic. So the architects, I would say, is, pretty much everyone, you know, because they know what it's about and there's no confusion. And then, of course, you got some, the guys who've been here longer drive it a lot more than the ones who are coming in, but at least everyone understands what we're trying to do.
It's just following up on that, obviously, you mentioned it earlier, I'm Rob's dad, and of course I take an active involvement on his career and his choice of university and all that. And it was a great disappointment to me when he chose to play fullback, but then I realised my broken nose is he should never have played in the back row. He's too pretty for that. for looking in from afar, it strikes me the Pat Lamb philosophy. You've adopted completely the Jim Collins good to great thing about get the right people on the bus, which necessitates getting the wrong people off it. And then the art is, over time, get the right people in the right seats. It strikes me that the Pat Lamb philosophy is very much about, this is where we're going. If you want to get on the bus, get on the bus. But if you don't, that's fine, but you're not on it. And that might be deemed as ruthlessness, but listening to you, it's not ruthless, it's black or white.
Yeah, I mean, I've read a few books and different things, but the biggest thing is life experiences. I think that's the thing. You go from your gut, you go from your heart, you go from your feel. You know, like I often will ask players, how do you like to be coached? You know, tell me how you don't like to be coached, you know, and I said, cool. And or I'll ask if I'm interviewing for a coach, I said, how did you like to be coached? And how don't you like to be coached? And I think so many, when I said that I was fortunate to be in some unsuccessful teams, that's because you learn from things that, mate, that doesn't work. You know, that's so I'm not going to be doing that as well. So, and again, I always say your life experiences are massive as long as you ask the question, what have I done well here? What could I do better? And when you're asking those questions all the time, because I'm not a massive reader of books. I'm like, in a way, I'll grab bits and pieces and stuff. And there are a couple of books I read all the way through. But there's bits that when I read a book, I tend to go into, I remember that when I was young, or I remember that when I was in this team, or I remember that in this situation in my marriage or something like that, you know. And so I always bring that into it. But I just go from the heart and the gut that I just know that if I put myself in that situation, how that I would I have liked to have been treated there. And it goes back to, you know, the best book, you know, the big man's book, which says, do unto others as you'd like them to do unto you, you know. And it's and it's a simple thing too, is like, for me, is like, you know, you love the big man and love your neighbor. And, you know, and when you do that, it's a simple thing. But how do you know how to love your neighbor? Well, you got to build a relationship. You got to, you know, you got to understand them and understand that. Because I say to the guys all the time, self-awareness is a great tool that you should have. Because I could tell a player, well, you haven't played well today. You did this, this, and this. But that's not going to do any good. Or I could ask the player, in relation to your best game, a 10 out of 10, how do you think you played today? And he'll go, oh, it's only a 5. And then he'll bring up the issues. And then I can ask the questions. Then he takes ownership for it. But the other thing to understand is, I always talk about socially aware. Being socially aware and EQ and so forth is massive. Because I said, and no, I mean, we only have to look at what's going on in America. But it goes on every day, everywhere around. You know, I say to the guys, understand that we are all, no one is more important than anyone else, regardless of color, race, you know, whether you come from a poor background or a rich background, no one is more important than anyone else. But understanding people are different. And if you have that and you have some empathy that people, you know, are different, and but also understanding, hopefully, that I try to get players and people to understand that. History, the reason why I love vision, history, your upbringing and whatever, all that's determined is showing you where you've come from and the learnings that you actually, the opportunity to take some learnings. But your vision and your goals and your dreams determine your future and where you could go. And any given time, wherever we're at, you know, that's doesn't mean that whatever you've gone from before is exactly what's going to happen to you. So vision is really important. So being self-aware and socially aware is crucial. But yeah, but for me, it's really about, you know, what I feel and what I've learnt and what I've seen and what I've experienced works.
You talk about obviously getting the right people involved, and obviously there's some incredible names coming to Bristol pretty soon, from your Cal Sinclairs to your Semi Radradas. I've seen you talk about when you coached the Barbarians, it was seeing Semi kind of putting in the extra work, even on a tour like that, that sort of inspired you to get in contact with him and try and get him involved at Bristol. What sort of things do you look for when you're looking to bring players, staff, you know, coaches into Bristol?
So I think from a bigger picture, there's a profile of the team. So I go back to the game that I want to play. And then you're looking at the qualities. And obviously, you could have all the best players in the world, all right? But if you don't have a good game, you're not going to win. You know, and you've seen it. Whatever sport, you're like, why? They've got all these names of players, but why aren't they? I normally say something's wrong with the game, the game plan. Something's wrong with the culture in their group, or something's wrong with the leadership in the group. So being able to build that. But remember when I went to Connacht, I arrived at Connacht and we had the lowest budget in the Northern Hemisphere professionally. And I looked at it and I said, right. And people started saying, oh, this player's no good. He can't do this. He can't do that. And I said, okay, can I change any? No, that's what you got. All right, let's start telling me what they can do. All right, let's start building them up. And then what I realized then is that we needed to have good staff. And staff then have got to have really good clarity on what they need to do to bring everybody up. And remember, going back to the mental side of it, I like to put a player here when I'm looking for staff. And then the key is putting as much support in. In my coaching philosophy, it talks about developing the whole athlete, you know, the physical, the mental, and the inner self, who they are, what's important to them, their values, and them as a person. And every bit of our staff has got to be able to be serving to help that player achieve that. Now, ultimately, as I say to players, you know, a lot of people are going to help you. And if you achieve all the goals you want to achieve, well done you. You've done all the work. If you don't achieve your goals, a lot of people have still helped you and put the work around you. Whose fault is it? And they look like this and they go,
it is another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Welcome back. I'm Chris Heal, and it is another two-part special as well. Obviously, we've had a lot of New Zealand coverage on our podcasts recently, but we also managed to squeeze in Pat Lam a couple of weeks ago, and unbelievable to have the Bristol Bears director of rugby on the podcast, the first part of this podcast, which you'll hear shortly, is very much about him coming to Bristol and the vision that he had for the club and the culture that he's managed to create there at Ashton Gate. And obviously Bristol currently sitting third in the Gallagher Premiership and hoping that the season will resume on the date that has been penciled in of the 15th of August, because Bristol are aiming high, as Pat will discuss in the first part of this Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. So the first part, as I said, will be pretty much focused on his time with Bristol Bears and the vision that Pat and the club have. And then the second part, we'll be talking a little bit about sort of Pat's playing career as well as his coaching as well at Connacht before we get into his Mars 15. So coming up, first and foremost, is part one of our Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with Bristol Bears Director of Rugby, Pat Lamb.
Yeah, mine. Just me. Great. No excuses, just yours. All right. So then my job is to get the right staff to support that as we come through and the player. And then when I'm looking at individuals and players, and obviously when I came to Bristol, there's the, you know, when you're talking about I just felt a lot of the budget, you look at your budget and you plan it, there's a certain amount of players that you do need in certain positions you got to have. But I noticed straight away a lot of money was spent in the wrong places. There was people getting paid that weren't number one or two. A lot of money. And so it was just wasted in the wrong way. So I like to have, you know, the first players should be world-class or close to being world-class. The second ones can compete with them. Then the third and fourth for a younger group that would potentially be number ones or twos, they're going to push these guys. Because if they're here, got their whippersnapper coming at them, they should go better. And if not, the whole team, there's competition right through. So certainly when the team I inherited, there wasn't enough competition. If we got a few injuries, which we did, we were under a lot of pressure. And so I was like, thankfully, we're in the championship here because I couldn't see how we were going to survive because there's a lot of changes that needed to happen. And when you've got guys who've been earning good money, but suddenly I'm asking them to do more, you know, you've got already a problem there. And then so you're building your team around there. And of course, you need some starters. And when you have the ability to choose like the marquee players, you don't want to waste that. And I believe Pete clubs and certainly Bristol possibly have wasted that money. So you're asking the question, if I'm going to spend a bit more money on someone, he has to be a real game changer on and off the field for me. He's got to be someone on the field that make a difference. So if I take Charles Pietel, obviously he answers that question. But the thing is, the only reason I went for Charles is because I knew him when he was a kid and I brought him through to Super Rugby. So I knew who he was, knew a lot about him, and I knew that I had a lot of confidence. Rather than looking at his ability on the tape, oh, he looks good. Semi Rodradra, as you said, I saw him playing NRL, fantastic, but I didn't know. So I was just admiring, but I would never have thought of bringing them here. Once they coached in the Barbas, got to know him over that week, saw what he did on and off the field, built a relationship. We kept talking through it and conversation, built a relationship, said him, he'll be good. He'll be able to come through. So there's a lot of different things, but you're trying to build a team that's going to add value, that's going to achieve the goals and get people proud and inspired. And then it just keeps going and keeps going.